that Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala made
That's
for
right.
the creatures, for the people.
Okay.
Yeah, that's this is the point that we should understand about the imam.
And we know that there are so many Quranic references in this regard. We can start referring to the family of Prophet Muhammad, to the Ahlul Bayt, Ayatul Tathir, Ayatul Velaya, isn't it? Ayah referring to Mubahila and the other cases.
Yeah, of course. Yes, of course, you know that about the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi salatu wasalam, first of all, we have ayat. And this ayat and the verses of the Holy Quran, the characteristics of the Ahlul Bayt are mentioned. Secondly, we have many ahadith about the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi salatu wasalam, in which the main focus of the ayat, the main focus of the ahadith is on fada'il, on the virtues of
yes.
Ahlul Bayt. You
That's
know,
right.
That is why Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala or the Holy Prophet Salawatullah alayhi wa alihi says that these people should be your Lord, should be your leaders, should be your guide, because they themselves are guided. You know, that's why they themselves are mutahhar, are ma'asum, are infallible. Only them you can trust. That is why they are considered as the imams, as the leaders, as the guide for the Muslim ummah and nation.
That's right.
Mostly because of their virtues.
Yes.
But of course, since the family is important, father
yes.
and mother is important.
Nurturing.
Nurturing is very much significant. So if you are son of a prophet, children of a prophet, that
yes.
would be, you would be more deserved to, for example, achieve this position of imam
right.
and leadership. Yes.
But as you said, under the true nurturing and the education of an infallible imam. That's right. Thank you very much, Sheikh, for a nice elaboration. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. The end of the episode. God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban li aliyin wa husayin wa hasan. لعلي وحسين وحسان إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسان لعلي وحسين وحسان كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
The journey of suffering.
Today we visited Rimam prison. We left the house at 3 o'clock. The ICRC bus picked us up at 4. Then the ICRC officers checked and gave us permits. They coordinated our visit and gave us some instructions about behaviors and meals to avoid a security search. The children rejoice that they're going to see their father for the first time. For example, my little son Muhannad has never seen his father. Muhannad does not even know him. We had been promised that all the children will meet their father. Unfortunately, Muhannad was allowed to meet his dad, but his brother wasn't. The little child started crying. We begged them to let him go with his brother, but they turned a cold shoulder.
I love my dad. I miss him so much. I asked them for an hour to enter, but the Israelis refused. I was looking forward to hugging him.
It's
الصليب احنا ما قصرش معانا.
The ICRC staff did their best to help us by all means. They relieved my fears of the visit. Honestly speaking, I was afraid and did not want to go. I refused the visit, but later when I met Abu Said, who came with the ICRC officers, I became quiet and calm. I thought that whatever happened in the prison would be safe with the ICRC officers.
ICRC is coordinating with Palestinian and Israeli authorities in order to allow Gazan detainees to receive visits from their families. During family visits, ICRC staff is always present at Erez checkpoint in order to facilitate the crossing.
The story begins here. A Palestinian family rejoiced in releasing his son from the Israeli occupation jails after 23 years of imprisonment.
I was very optimistic about being included in the first list of prisoners to be released. I spent 23 years in the prison and had to spend another 2 years of the sentence. I was not surprised so much by the release, but I was absolutely excited about it. But I wish the list had included some brothers of mine in the prison who were sentenced to life imprisonments rather than releasing me. Anyway, it was my destiny to be free, thanks Allah. When they brought us from the prison to Gaza and we found such a reception at Erez Crossing, we were very proud of our people, relatives, and the homeland. I met my beloved sons, family, relatives, and people.
I was tortured in isolated underground cells because I did not confess anything. In the beginning of my imprisonment, I refused to speak. Then I discovered I was pregnant. I announced a hunger strike, and my announcement way was different from the way now made by the prisoners.
Mahmoud Al-Zaq, a released prisoner, has suffered a lot from imprisonment. She withstood against torture apparatus. She was a good example in standing against the enemy and in belonging to home.
It was not just to say I announced hunger strike. I refused to have meals from the Israeli canteen, and I used to tell them, I do not have an appetite. This statement was my slogan, which confused the officers. It would have been easier for them if I simply said I was hunger striking.
With silently crying eyes seeking to meet their beloved imprisoned son and raising victory signs in reference to keep demonstration, as long as their sons are imprisoned in the Israeli jails, prisoners' families marched to the International Committee of the Red Cross, ICRC office in Gaza on Mondays, to send their message to the world. Abu Sharif, a father of a prisoner in Israeli jail, talks about prisoners' situation, suffering of prisoners' families, and their weekly demonstration.
The Monday demonstration is sacred. We have to demonstrate in solidarity with the prisoners. We call for prisoners' freedom and good treatment instead of maltreating them inside the Israeli jails.
The main players of the international community, they support Israel by a way or another, and they lived a long time ago in conspiracy of silence, which gives the Israel the green light to violate and to increase their violations against the Palestinians.
In the journey for covering another suffering, we met Om Nidal, a mother of two long-term prisoners, aged and burdened with life bitterness. A journey of 1,000 miles begins here.
Dia was jailed at the age of 16 on October the 10th, 1992. Next month, Dia will be 22 years old. He executed a heroic resistance operation for the sake of his people and cause. This is why the Israelis arrested him. Muhammad, who is 22 years old, has been detained since he was 11. He was 11 when his brother was arrested. He's been imprisoned for 11 years. We used to visit him fortnightly. To us, the visit day was like a festival or a pilgrimage. Actually, as if we're going to visit the Prophet or the Kaaba. The night before the visit, we felt that we were really going to the Kaaba. They were our sons in the jail. It was absolute rejoice. We were not able to sleep the night before the visit. We stayed up all night waiting for the visiting time next day. But since the imposal of the Shalit law, Gaza families have been prohibited from visiting their sons in prison.
لكن محدد ما حط قانون شريط منع زياره اهل يعني اهالي اسقط على غزه
محمد نشبت a recently released prisoner is still receiving his friends and relatives telling them about the pains of the prison
التحقيق يعني كان عذاب مش بشكل طبيعي يعني اول شيء من ناحيه نفسيه كان عذاب
نفسي interrogation was miserable it was unbelievable first of all the investigation was psychiatric torture I was tied by the hands and legs, and my head covered with a foul-smelling bag, my clothes torn and my body partially naked. The jailers used to force me to stay in this manner for 3 or 4 hours. Then they forced me to keep standing for 4 to 10 hours in miserable humiliation, sleepless, without looking at what was going on around me. I was not allowed to sleep or to sit down. When I surrendered to sleep, I was suddenly beaten. I suffered from this interrogative method for 28 days. International law, including the Fourth Geneva Convention, is applicable in occupied territories like Palestine, including the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, and Jerusalem. According to the convention, the law of war is applicable in these territories. So anyone arrested by a military occupation in occupied territories is called a civilian prisoner, not a prisoner of war. This is the general basis.
هذه هي القاعدة العامة.
حمل ثقيل يعني. هذا متجوز وعنده أسرة ونسوان ثنتين وبيت ملوش.
It is really a big burden. He is married and has a family and 2 wives. He does not have a house. They have lived in a room in my house since he was arrested. They suffer a lot. Even his first wife is not allowed to visit him in the prison. The absence of the father makes a big problem. In our Arab culture, the father, with the mother's assistance, is the only one who can raise his children well. So they suffer from his absence psychologically and socially.
Men's eyes do not tear, but refuse tyranny. The son and mother of the prisoner are preoccupied with unforgettable memories.
Sharif used to come here in the kitchen every Friday on his way to the mosque close to our place.
الأسبوع الأول أنا ما شفتش طعم النوم ولا الراحة كنت مشبوهة.
In the first week, I was not able to sleep or relax. I was tied by the hands and legs to a middle chair, bowing forward sometimes and backward with the hands tied to the legs from the back other times. I estimated these stays lasted from 8 to 10 hours each day. I was even prohibited from praying on the chair. During this week, I refused to talk about anything related to the occupied territories. I was tortured physically and psychologically.
طالما الأسر إبعاد الإنسان وسلخ الإنسان عن الحياة الطبيعية
As long as imprisonment isolates a human from a normal life, it has severe effects on his or her psychology and mentality. This means a human lacks a normal life and communication with people and turns him or her to living an abnormal life. Sometimes solitary confinement aims to deprive a human of his or her natural psychology and intellectuality. Imprisonment forces a human to live an abnormal life full of difficulties, isolated from normality, and deprived of a family and loved ones.
The prisoners who have been exiled from their own cities and families soon after being released participate in the demonstration of prisoners' families, calling for stopping oppressing sentences against the exiled and prisoners.
Exiling the Palestinians, who are the original population of the land, is a well-known Israeli policy and has been practiced by the occupation from 1948 until now. Its main goal is to replace the Palestinians with settlements and settlers in the West Bank. For this reason, the Israelis imposed wave of exile actions like the Marj al-Zohar exile, the exile of the Nativity Church, and those who were already exiled to prison. There was an occupation policy to get rid of the land's original population. The deported lost his heritage, his roots, his past, his life, his relationships, all his memories, his whole experience, his personality.
Israel used to transfer the Palestinians who are accused by Israel that they are dangerous and they have secret files against them as one of the extreme violations of the international law. The international law prevents the occupation and doesn't give the occupation the right to deport any Palestinian from the, his or her land. But they used this kind of violations or such decisions since long time ago against many Palestinians. Because Israel doesn't admit or recognize the international law.
بعد سبع سنين شفت ابني شوف ايش كانت حالتي
يعني I saw my son after 7 years. You can imagine how I was waiting for his release. I could not know whether I was crying or confused. Looking at my watch for a while, laughing and crying for another, I was not able to utter a single word. Finally, when I saw Muhammad, I could not control my behavior. I started pulling him, and an Israeli soldier forcibly kept my son away. The soldier threatened me that if Muhammad and I would not stop pulling each other, he would not allow us to have a photo. Indeed, I wanted to hug my son rather than to have a photo with him.
كنا احنا يعني بدناش نتصور بس بدنا نحضن بعض
يوم بدنا نزوره بده 16 ساعه 15 ساعه
Visiting a prisoner takes 15 to 16 hours. We walk to the ICRC office at 4 o'clock. Then a lot of procedures start, taking the buses to Erez Crossing, waiting until it opens, passing the crossing to a security search, and then returning to the buses for a journey of 2 hours to arrive at the prison.
I wish I could live until the time when my son is released. I've been told he might be included in the first or second list of prisoners to be released. I pray to God to see him. Why not to see him? I can feel my wish coming true.
Prison prevented Muhammad Nashabat from bidding farewell to his mother before she had passed away. The crew accompanied Muhammad in his visit to the tomb.
Mm-hmm.
Yusuf is a child whose mother delivered while she was imprisoned. Jail doors raised him in an endless flow of fear.
They deprived my baby from milk at the age of 2 months due to their claim that the Israeli milk companies closed. For me, the milk price was very expensive, so I weaned the baby off pressed milk and fed him bread and yogurt. Can you imagine this? Then the baby's temperature rose high and he had a convulsion. I thought I would lose my baby. And this all was because of the occupation's carelessness. The occupation never provided health care to the baby. He had not been checked by any doctor except one time. And I doubt whether that was a real doctor or an intelligence officer pretending.
Nashabat, the released prisoner, meets one of his prison friends after being released.
Welcome. How are you doing?
I am fine. How are you?
I am glad to see you.
How are your colleagues?
They are all fine. They send their warm greetings to you and wish you all the best.
Thank God for your release.
Thank you.
ما استخدموا معنا بس فقط اللي هو العذاب النفسي ولكن كمان انه العنف بالفتره اللي فاتت كان اللي هي هزت الرقبه.
They impose not only psychological torture on us but also violence. The most violent torture we feared was shaking the neck or the chest because it resulted in the brain shaking. But thanks God, we passed this experiment well, so we can bear any difficulty for the sake of our fair cause. We have chosen this way ourselves. Nobody forced us to do so. During the test of jail, interrogation happened 5 or 6 times each night. 3 to 5 intelligence officers interrogated you in their office. They always spoke to us in an obscene tone, abusing and insulting us and our relatives. They aimed to weaken our will and self-confidence as Palestinian fighters.
كثير من الأحيان وإنت قاعد في الاعتقال أو في أي مكان آخر أنت بتعيد لشيوط مرة أخرى قدام عينيك.
A prisoner always flashes back to the actions imposed on him in prison. These memories may also stimulate the ear, eye, and skin if the memories include torture. So the prisoner's mind becomes like a piece of sponge that absorbs events and actions in the jail from the beginning to the end. So the effects of imprisonment remain inside a human his whole life. Israeli violations towards the prisoners escalate every day. This can be noticed from the use of solitary confinement and torture, including some policies whose effects are not apparent, but leave an impact on all the prisoners. Israeli exile has many forms: interior, exterior, group, and individual. Individual exile is exiling a person from prison to a place out of his homeland or to the Gaza Strip. A good example is the case of the Nativity Church. Of 39 fighters, 26 were exiled to the Gaza Strip and 13 to European countries. So the forms and colors of exile policy the Israeli occupation applies are various.
They use the
78th item of the 4 Geneva Conventions, and they analyze it according to their benefits, the Israel security benefit, because one of the items of the conventions gives the occupation the right to impose any Palestinian to stay in his in the same area, but not to transfer him from his own area to another geographical area, like what happened with these two in this case.
To me, the exiled person is similar to someone made naked in front of others. From this perspective, we found its effects dangerous to let such a person live with his memories far away. Even phone calls with his relatives could not compensate for his deprivation of his real environment, which he now misses.
The journey of suffering keeps on going, beginning from the ICRC office and ending in the Erez crossing, the line separating the Gaza Strip and the Israeli occupation. After this journey of challenge and humiliation ends, the relatives of the released prisoners can hardly meet their sons for a few minutes, a period that does not even get the mother's tears of this affecting meeting dried.
Bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
In the United States, Ohio Governor Mike DeWine has asked President Joe Biden to issue a major disaster declaration for the 3rd of February trail derailment in East Palestine, Ohio, that released massive amounts of toxic chemicals. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine on Monday, 3rd of July, asked President Joe Biden to issue a major presidential disaster declaration over the Norfolk Southern trail derailment in East Palestine, Ohio, a tool to guarantee federal aid in the future. The Ohio community is still dealing with the environmental and health-related fallout from the chemical disaster propelled by the 3rd of February derailment. Monday, 3rd of July, was the deadline the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, set for Mike DeWine to make the request after the agency gave DeWine an extension on 7th of March to decide whether to make the request. The possibility remains that the voluntary support provided by Norfolk Southern could at some point in the future cease, and this declaration is needed to ensure that the state and the federal government use all resources available to step in and provide the community with needed assistance, Mike DeWine said in his letter to President Biden. Devine's office expressed concern that the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA's, help could still be needed if Norfolk Southern's voluntary aid subsides, and there could be future costs that have yet to be identified. Because of the unique nature of this incident, the state is still working to identify current needs and evaluate the future impacts of this disaster, that this disaster will have on individuals and the wider community, Mike Devine wrote. The incident had immediate physical and mental health effects on the community, and the Ohio Department of Health engaged with the Department of Health and Human Services to establish a clinic in the community. However, the long-term health impacts are unknown. In addition to the physical and mental health impacts, there have been economic impacts. Homeowners and businesses have seen property value decline and loss of business as people are hesitant to come into the community. Mike Devine, a Republican, said the state will comply with any applicable cost-sharing requirements associated with specific programs. President Biden said he would visit East Palestine, although he has yet to do so. The heads of the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, and the Department of Transportation have visited the community. After the train derailment, Mike Devine said President Biden contacted him and offered any federal assistance necessary. "Look, the president called me and said, anything you need. I have not called him back after that conversation," Devine said at the time. "We will not hesitate to do that if we're seeing a problem or anything, but I'm not seeing it right now." The cable broadcaster CNN Cable News Network has also covered the same story. Ohio Governor Mike Devine has asked President Joe Biden to issue a major disaster declaration for the 3rd of February train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio, that released massive amounts of toxic chemicals into the environment, triggered evacuations and extensive ongoing cleanup operations. In his letter to President Biden, the Republican Governor Mike Devine said the declaration is needed to ensure that the state and federal government use all resources available to step in and provide the community with needed assistance. The letter notes that currently no unmet needs have been reported to the state because of the voluntary assistance of rail operator Norfolk Southern. The company has reimbursed citizens and local governments for costs relating to the incident, but that voluntary assistance may end at any time, according to Ohio Governor Mike Devine, leaving the state in the lurch. "I have determined that this incident is of such severity and magnitude that effective response is beyond the capabilities of the state and the affected local governments, and that supplementary federal assistance is necessary," he wrote. The freight train was transporting hazardous chemicals when it derailed in the northeastern Ohio town of East Palestine of about 4,700 people, leading to a days-long fire. Amid fears of a catastrophic explosion of one of those chemicals, the highly flammable vinyl chloride, residents were evacuated and crews conducted a controlled burn of the chemical, averting an explosion but causing new health concerns in the area. "Because of the unique nature of this incident, the state is still working to identify current needs and evaluate the future impacts of this disaster will have on individuals and the community," the governor of Ohio went on to say. "In addition to the physical and mental health impacts, there have been economic impacts. Homeowners and businesses have seen property value decline and loss of business as people are hesitant to come into the community. Cleanup of the site continues today, 5 months after the derailment," according to Mike Devine. The letter also includes a summary of the effects of the derailment. Residents continue to report medical conditions and are concerned that the air and water were impacted by the chemicals released during this incident, he wrote. Ohio residents have reported rashes, headaches, and other symptoms that they believe may be tied to the derailment incident. Monday, 3rd of July, was a deadline to make the request set by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, according to a news release from the governor's office. The agency denied a 13th of June request from the Ohio government for additional time to request the disaster declaration. As of a June update, more than 20 million gallons of wastewater have been removed in total from East Palestine, according to the Ohio Environmental Protection Agency. Approximately 11,400 tons of excavated soil is still awaiting removal, while 66,300 tons have been removed, according to officials. The American newspaper The Hill has also covered this same story and tells us more. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine, a Republican governor, has asked President Joe Biden to declare a major presidential disaster for the train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio, earlier this year, which resulted in toxic chemicals spewing from several boxcars. In a letter sent on Monday, 3rd of July, Mike DeWine told President Biden that the declaration is needed to ensure that the state and federal government use all resources available to step in and provide the community with much-needed assistance. The Republican governor of Ohio, Mike DeWine, added that currently no unmet needs have been reported due to the voluntary assistance from the rail operator Norfolk Southern, noting that there is a possibility that the voluntary assistance provided by the rail operator could cease in the future. According to CNN, Norfolk Southern has reimbursed citizens and local governments for costs relating to the incident. I have determined that this incident is of such severity and magnitude that effective response is beyond the capabilities of the state and the affected local governments, and that supplementary federal assistance is necessary, Mike DeWine wrote in his letter. DeWine also noted in his letter a summary of the effects of the train derailment, noting how residents continue to report medical conditions and concerns about the air quality in the area. The letter comes months after a train carrying toxic chemicals derailed near the Pennsylvania state line, causing a massive fire and prompting authorities to evacuate about half of the 4,800 residents in the surrounding area, which included the village of East Palestine. Norfolk Southern, the rail operator, said some of the rail cars were carrying hazardous materials, including vinyl chloride, combustible liquids, butyl acrylate, benzene residue, and other non-hazardous materials.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran. for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome to Islamic Upbringing. This is your host, Zainab. In this program, we try to answer your questions and queries you have regarding the Islamic upbringing of your children. The answers are based upon the Noble Quran and the narrations from Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him and his purified family. Today in our studio, we have had the pleasure to be with Professor Salman Nakavi, who is an Islamic scholar and a faculty member at the Al-Mustafa University, Qom, Iran. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome, sir.
Thank you.
Well, everybody gets so much information all day long that they lose their common sense. And we don't want that to be happening with our teenagers. What do you say, Professor?
Yes, we need, as you said, common sense is developed when you interact with the common people, when you discuss, when you interact and discuss things with others, with the personal face-to-face interaction that we have been used to for centuries, and that interaction cannot be again replaced by technology. Even today, the best type of, video conferencing you can have, but it does not give you that human touch.
Right.
You can go to Zoom, you can go to
GMeet,
whatever, GoMeet or whatever, but it can't be replaced for that, in brick mortar setting that we have, sit together across the table, across the sofa set and discuss with each other. This is something which it's a personal interaction, and our children require that. We need to interact with our children in this affectionate way, in this loving way, and it's not just communicating by using words. You can't even those human emotions, those human the way you look at your child, or the way you smile at him, and the way your body language is. You hug him or her, or you take clasp their hands and you talk to them.
The transmit of that energy,
that cannot be. What's this emoji?
Emojis. Yeah.
Yeah. You send over the okay. They're good, but they're not going to replace what is
the actual emotions.
Actual thing. So basically, we need to understand that we should allow our children some time with this. You cannot stop them. You cannot avoid it. And we shouldn't be avoiding it, but we should be allowing our children to use it, to get engaged with it, to remain with it, to work with it. But setting priorities is important. Use it for your studies. Use it for even your leisure.
Research, leisure time.
Leisure time.
Yeah.
Playing games is no problem, but you try to channelize them towards games which are going to teach them like something which is going to increase their vocabulary.
Right.
Or it's going to teach them how to spell correctly. So
right.
There are many games nowadays which are made to develop your language skills, your
increase vocabulary.
It can help you solve your problems, mathematical issues, or even correct your grammatical mistakes. And
right.
So many things can be learned. Or you crosswords and scramble or things like that can be played. It can be played, play and learn together. So
this is a message for all those mothers who are concerned about the kids who take their mobile phones and then they keep on downloading the games, whatever they, I don't know, they kind of mostly boys I have seen, they only fight in the those games. You're saying that it's a good replacer, like there are apps which can increase your vocabulary or the capability of mathematical
IQ. There are IQ tests, there are personality tests. You can take them, to ask your children to go through them and see what type of personality you have or what is your IQ.
Your personality in terms of language and other things. Well, Professor, we'll be talking more about that with you after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. We are with Professor Salman Nakawi, and we're discussing about the impacts of technology on teenage upbringing. And Professor Salman Nakawi is helping us. Yes, Professor.
So, as I was saying, we need to teach them how to manage their priorities and to manage their time, benefits from it in the utmost way. So they need to understand that they have goals to achieve. Those goals have to be, you know, goal setting has to be, you know, learned.
Realistic.
We need to learn. Realistic goals have to be made to achieve what we want and how to achieve them. And wherever technology is going to help us to achieve those goals, we need to make it a part of our strategy. Of how to achieve our goals. The way to achieve those goals can be for even time management.
Right.
Can be done through with the help of this of these
apps,
or you can your timetable, your meeting times, your sleeping time, your whatever that you can feed in your daily timetable, and you can set targets, and you can set milestones, and you can use a WBS, a work breakdown structure, to make a Gantt chart for yourself, and you can reach. So even for reaching those goals and setting your goals and setting tasks for yourself and for others, for your children, you can teach them and you can use them as these applications are going to help us.
Right.
So wherever they're going to take us towards our goals, we need to benefit. And that's what we need to learn and we need to teach our children.
Right. Well, Professor, while dealing with the technology, especially the digital technology and the teenagers already suffer from so many issues. They have peer pressure, they have stress, they have anxiety. They already go through so much of change in that particular age. And what role does cyberbullying play over here on teenage? What impact does it have?
So, of course, cyberbullying, if we want to understand what happens, is that when you get into an interaction with someone whom you're not supposed to get, be talking to you to, you get...
There's unnecessary harassment sometimes.
Yes. So, nobody harasses you if you don't provide the opportunity.
Exactly.
So, number one, there has to be prevention. You need to teach your child to be able to prevent himself or herself from getting into such a situation. That is...
Not to get harassed there.
Yes. So, that's the number one level of, teaching that is required, prevention. And deflecting anything which may come as a harm. So you need to develop those white blood cells in the human behavior, not in the human blood, the white blood cells which are going to repel such sort of...
Exactly. Infectious kind of bullying.
Such sort of behavior. Which is
going
to come.
Humiliation.
So one, you need to make yourself and your child understand or realize... what type of behavior is going to end up in a, you know, difficult situation.
Right.
You need to know, teach them, if you get involved into a discussion or into a relationship with a stranger whom you don't know at all.
Right.
So in the beginning, there are many people who just start off with a very exciting way of interacting and communicating and open up to them, themselves to you.
Then you never know where you end up.
And you feel quite confident and you feel relaxed and you then open up with your secrets and so
exactly.
on. What happens is that the other person was looking for that
weakness.
Weakness, and he finds it.
Right. That's a very important point now. We'll discuss more on that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
Imam Ali alayhi salam said, be like a friendly physician who applies medicine where it is useful.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. We are with Professor Salman Nakavi discussing the impact of technology on the teenage upbringing. While we were talking about cyberbullying, Professor, we said that cyberbullying in itself, like if teenagers face harassment online, or if they face humiliation or any kind of social isolation, this does affect their mental health and well-being, leading them to anxiety, stress, and sometimes even suicide. And you were telling us the ways to help that.
So we need to understand how does the bully penetrate into the armor that we should have, you know, put up to stop that happening. So he or she is looking for a weak point, and when you give that weak point, your child gives that weak point. For example, he or she shares a personal private picture, photograph of himself or herself for that stranger.
Right.
Then
you never know.
You never know what happens then with that. So then it comes up. It becomes viral.
Right.
So
faces that challenge.
Tries to blackmail you.
Right.
Before setting it up as a virus and making it viral.
Right.
He or she may blackmail you or your daughter or your son that if you don't do that or do this, I will, you know, this private picture of yours, I will, you know, send it into the
blackmailing. Actually,
so it's blackmailing. It's threatening. So now, if you have a good relationship with your child, and he or she has made that mistake, he or she should be able to come to you very candidly.
You have to develop that bond,
of course,
basically.
I mean, candidly, she or he should come to you and say, look, I made this mistake, and now I've done this, and now this is the result. This is the consequence of what I did. Now, please help me. How can we stop this happening? Now, you need to be able to discuss that, or you need to discuss the problem. You need to find solutions. For example, you can go to the criminal wing of the police, for example.
Right.
You can seek their help to somehow, because nowadays every country, every state has
that cybercrime branch.
Cybercrime branch, and you can go to them to request their. But if the child keeps it to himself or herself and does not open up, then he or she will be continuously harassed and threatened by the person who
and
is doing
the, and suffers that mental torture.
Exactly.
That they really don't deserve. Because teenage is that age wherein you really trust upon people, or you kind of feel free to be with everyone. But parents have to be teaching their children that the internet is actually a great way to get on the net. So teenagers have to be taught that. And before teenagers are taught that, parents themselves need to educate themselves completely about this tech world, the positive effects, the negative effects, and how they can help out their children if they are facing some kind of cyberbullying or any kind of harassment on that platform. Thank you so much, Professor Salman Nakavi, for being with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio.